Welcome to another edition of podcast from Gothenburg-400.com. This is Reddy. Professor Max Tegmark's research is focused on precision cosmology and artificial intelligence. He is also a co-founder of Future of Life Institute and an ardent proponent of artificial intelligence. But he says it should be used wisely, beginning with imbibing kindergarten morals into machines. Will artificial intelligence amplify human intelligence? How will AI enrich the lives of human beings and scale down the challenges such as inequalities and threat of wars and weapons of mass destruction? In this podcast, you will hear from him. Apologies to you because there was an interruption in recording at one point. Sorry. Professor Tegmark starts by talking about cosmos.
Cosmic history. Our universe has woken up and become aware of itself. I call the earliest life 1.0 because it was really dumb, like bacteria, unable to learn anything during its lifetime. I call us humans life 2.0 because we can learn, which me and nerdy geek speak might think of as installing new software into our brains, like languages and job skills. When I was born, I speak well in a couple of Spanish, generalita, but then I thought, hey, maybe I should install an English-speaking module into my brain, so here we are. Life 3.0, which can design not only its software, but also its hardware, of course it doesn't exist yet, but perhaps our technology has already made us Life 2.1, with artificial knees, pacemakers, and cochlear implants. So let's talk more closely about, look more closely at our relationship with technology. As an example, the Apollo 11 moon mission was both successful and inspiring, showing that when we humans use technology wisely, we can accomplish things that our ancestors could only dream of. But there's an even more inspiring journey, propelled by something more powerful than rocket engines, where the passengers aren't just three people, but all of humanity. Let's talk about our collective journey into the future with artificial intelligence. My friend Jan Kalin likes to point out that just as with rocketry, it's not enough to make our technology powerful. To be truly ambitious, we also have to figure out how to steer it and where we want to go with it. So let's talk about all three for artificial intelligence: the power, the steering, and the destination. Starting with the power. I define intelligence very inclusively, simply as the ability to accomplish complex goals. Because I want to include both biological and artificial intelligence. And I want to avoid the silly carbon chauvinism idea that you can only be smart if you're made of meat. It's really amazing how the power of AI has grown recently. Think about it. Not long ago, robots couldn't walk. Now, they can do backflips. Not long ago, we didn't have self-driving cars. Now, we have self-flying rockets. Not long ago, AI couldn't do face recognition. Now, AI can generate fake faces, and it can simulate your face, saying stuff that you never said. Not long ago, AI couldn't beat us at the game of Go. Then Google DeepMind's AlphaZero AI took 3,000 years of human Go games and human Go wisdom, ignored it all, and became the world's best player by simply playing against itself. And the most impressive feat here was not that it crushed human gamers, but that it crushed human AI researchers who'd spent decades handcrafting and game-playing software. And AlphaZero crushed human AI researchers not just at Go, but even at chess that we've been working on since 1950. So all this amazing recent progress really begs the question, how far will it go? I like to think about this question in terms of this abstract landscape of tasks, where the elevation represents how hard it is for AI to do each task, and the sea level represents what AI can do today. The sea level is rising as AI improves, so there's a kind of global warming going on here in the task landscape. The obvious takeaway is to avoid jobs at the waterfront, which will soon be disrupted by automation. But there is also a much bigger question. How high will the water end up rising? Will it eventually submerge everything, matching human intelligence at all tasks. This is the definition of artificial general intelligence, AGI, which has been the holy grail of AI research since its inception. By this definition, people say, there'll always be jobs that humans can do better. We might still choose to have some human jobs or to get humans income and purpose without jobs, but AGI would in any case transform life as we know it, with humans no longer being the most intelligent. Now, if the water level does reach AGI, then further AI progress will be mainly driven not by human researchers, but by AI, which means that additional AI progress could be much faster than the typical human research and development timescale of years, raising the controversial possibility of an intelligence explosion, where recursively self-improving AI rapidly leaves human intelligence far behind, creating what's known as superintelligence. All right, reality check. Are we going to get AGI anytime soon? Some famous AI researchers, like Rodney Brooks, think it won't happen for hundreds of years. But others, like Google DeepMind CEO Demis Hassabis, are more optimistic and are working to make it happen much sooner. And recent surveys have shown that most AI researchers actually share Demis's optimism, guessing that we are going to get AGI within decades. So, within the lifetime of many of us. Which begs the question, and then what? What will the role of humans be if machines can do everything better and cheaper than we can? The way I see it, we face a choice. One option is to be complacent. You can say, let's just build machines that can do everything we can do and not worry about the consequences. Come on, if we build the technology that makes all humans obsolete, I mean, what could possibly go wrong? But I think that would be embarrassingly lame. Let's be more ambitious. Let's envision a truly inspiring high-tech future and figure out how to steer toward it. Which brings us to the next part of our rocket metaphor, the steering. Right? So we're making AI more powerful, but how can we steer it towards a future where it helps humanity flourish rather than flounder? To help with this, I co-founded the Future of Life Institute, a nonprofit organization promoting beneficial use of technology. And our goal is simply for the future of life to exist and to be as inspiring as possible. Now, I love technology. Technology is why today is better than the Stone Age. Right? And I'm optimistic that we can create an inspiring high-tech future if we win the wisdom race, the race between the growing power of the technology and the wisdom with which we manage it. But this is a big if, because this is going to require a change of strategy. Our old strategy used to be learning from mistakes. We invented fire, screwed up a bunch of times, invented the fire extinguisher. We invented the car, screwed up a bunch of times, invented the seatbelt, the traffic light, and the airbag. But with more powerful technology, like nuclear weapons and AGI, learning from mistakes is a lousy strategy. Don't you think? I mean, it's much better to be proactive rather than reactive. Plan ahead and get things right the first time, because that might be the only time we'll get. But it is funny, because sometimes people tell me, Max, shh, don't talk like that. That's Luddite scaremongering. But it's not scaremongering. It's what we here at MIT call safety engineering. Think about it. Before NASA launched the Apollo 11 mission, they systematically thought through everything that could go wrong when putting people on top of explosive fuel tanks and launching them to a place where no one could help them. And there was a lot that could go wrong. Was that scaremongering? No, that was precisely the safety engineering that led to the success of the mission. And that's precisely the strategy I think we should take with AGI. Think through what can go wrong to make sure it goes right. So in this spirit, we've organized conferences bringing together leading AI researchers and other thinkers to discuss how to grow this wisdom needed to keep AI beneficial. The last conference we had was in Asilomar, California last year, and they produced this list of 23 principles, which have since been signed by over 1,000 AI researchers and key industry leaders. Now I want to tell you about just three of them. One is that we should avoid an arms race and lethal autonomous weapons. The idea here is that any science can be used for new ways of helping people or new ways of harming people. For example, biology and chemistry are much more likely to be used for new cures, for new materials, than for new ways of killing people, because biologists and chemists successfully pushed for bad. And indeed, the reason there has been such strong reaction to the recent events in Syria is because we've successfully created such a stigma against chemical weapons that everybody agrees that this is a disgusting use of chemistry. In the same spirit, most AI researchers want to have a ban on offensive lethal autonomous weapons. And I was very heartened to hear that our Minister of Education here said that she supports limiting military use of AI. But I have to say, I'm really disappointed with our Defense Minister, Peter Hultqvist, and the Swedish government for refusing to join Austria and other nations at the United Nations just last week to really lead the push for such a ban. I think the Swedish government should listen more to scientists and really have the courage to stand up to both Trump and Putin and do the right thing to make sure that AI becomes a force for good in the world. Another thing that I think is that we should really mitigate AI-fueled income inequality. I feel that if we can grow the overall economic pie enormously with AI, and we still can't figure out how to share this pie so everyone gets better off, then shame on us. Now, raise your hand if your computer has ever crashed. Oh, that's a lot of hands. Well, then you'll appreciate this principle, that we should invest much more in AI safety research. Because as we put AI in charge of ever more decisions and infrastructure, we have to figure out how to transform these buggy and hackable computers into robust AI systems that we can really trust. Because otherwise all this awesome new technology can malfunction and harm us, or get hacked and be turned against us. And this AI safety work must include research on AI value alignment. Because the real threat from AGI is not malice, like in silly Hollywood movies, but competence. AGI accomplishing goals that simply aren't aligned with ours. Think about it. When we humans drove the West African black rhino extinct, we didn't do it because we were a bunch of evil rhinoceros haters, did we? No, we did it because we were more intelligent than them, and our goals weren't aligned with theirs. Now, AGI is by definition more intelligent than humans. So, to make sure that we don't put humanity in the position of those rhinos if we build AGI, we need to figure out how to make sure that machines understand our goals, adopt our goals, and retain our goals. And which goals should these be? This leads to the third part of our rocket metaphor, the destination. We're making AI more powerful, trying to figure out how to steer it, but what sort of future society are we hoping for if we succeed? This is the elephant in the room that almost nobody is talking about, because we're so fixated on immediate term AI challenges. And it was exactly because of this that I also wrote my book on the topic. You know, we are, as a species, trying to build AGI. But what sort of future society are we hoping for if we succeed? We did a recent opinion poll on this, and I was struck by how most people actually want us to build super intelligence, AI that's vastly smarter than humans in all ways. We have the greatest agreement on that we should be ambitious and help life spread into the cosmos, but there was much less agreement about who or what should be in charge. And I was actually kind of amused to see that there were even some people who wanted to be just machines in charge. And there was total disagreement about what the role of humans should be, even at the most basic level. So let's take a closer look at possible futures that we might choose to steer toward. Don't get me wrong here, I'm not talking about space travel, just about humanity's metaphorical journey into the future. Right? Some of my colleagues prefer that we build superintelligence and keep it under human control, like an enslaved god, disconnected from the internet and used to create unprecedented technology and wealth for whoever controls it. But Lord Acton warned us that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So you might worry that perhaps we humans just aren't wise enough to handle this much power. Also, whatever moral qualms you might have about enslaving superior minds in the matter too, if you didn't like either of those, well, actually, let me tell you first that I also have some colleagues, believe it or not, who are actually fine with machines taking over, AI taking over, and even causing human extinction, as long as we feel that the AIs are our worthy descendants. But how do we know that the machines have actually adopted our best values? And as I said a moment ago, shouldn't those people who actually don't want humanity to go extinct get to have a say on this too? I think so. Now, if you didn't like either of those two high-tech options, then it's important to remember that low-tech is suicide from a cosmic perspective. Because if you don't go far beyond today's technology, the question isn't if humanity is going to go extinct, but merely whether we're going to get taken out by the next killer asteroid, supervolcano, or some other problem that better technology could have solved. So how about having our cake and eating it with AGI that's not enslaved, but treats us well because its values are aligned with ours? This is the gist of what Eliezer Yudkowsky has called friendly AI, all right? And if we could pull this off, it could really be awesome. It could not only eliminate negative experiences like poverty, disease, crime, and other forms of suffering, but it could also give us the freedom to choose between a fantastic new diversity of positive experiences, basically making us the masters of our own destiny. So in summary, our relationship with technology is complicated, but the big picture is rather simple. Most AI researchers expect AGI within decades, and if we just bumble into this unprepared, it's probably going to be the biggest mistake in human history. It could enable brutal global dictatorship with unprecedented inequality, surveillance, and suffering, perhaps even human extinction. But if we steer carefully, we can end up in a fantastic future where everyone is better off. The poor are richer, the rich are richer, everyone is healthy and free to live out their dreams. Now hang on, do you want a future society that's politically right or left? Do you want a pious society with strict moral rules? Or do you want the hedonistic free-for-all, like Burning Man 24/7? Do you want beautiful beaches, forests, and lakes? Or do you want to rearrange some of those atoms into computers, enabling virtual experiences? With AGI, with friendly AI in particular, we could just build all of these future societies and give people the freedom to choose which one they want to live in, because we'd no longer be limited by our intelligence, merely by the laws of physics. So the resources and space for this would be astronomical. So here's our choice. We can either be complacent, taking as an article of blind faith that any new technology is guaranteed to be beneficial, and just repeating this as a mantra to ourselves over and over and over again as we drift like a rudderless ship towards our own obsolescence. Or we can be ambitious, thinking hard about how to steer our technology and where we want to go with it to create a truly inspiring future. We're all here today to celebrate science and humanity. And I feel that the essence of this should be for us to have to build technology, to build not technology that overpowers us, but empowers us. Thank you. Tat.
Thank you very much, Mike. Now, thank you. Let's see, do we have a question for the audience? We have one right here and we have one over there. Let's start in the front row. Yes.
Hello, Max. Is this on? Yes. Hello, Max. This is Carl-Johan Sundberg from Sweden. I have a question on how you foresee the tentative takeover, so to speak, of machines and robots when it comes to their, let's say, self-assembly, propagation and energy support in a distant, tentative future. Any thoughts on that?
Sure. Thank you, Kuryuan. First of all, it's important to remember that powerful AI can cause a lot of problems even if the machines themselves never take over, because if they are controlled by humans, then those humans might get unparalleled power and take over the whole world. And there are a lot of humans that I would prefer not taking over the world, frankly. And as long as humans are involved, all these questions about how they can be assembled and so on are pretty obvious. Leaving aside ways in which computers, if they get smarter than us, can also do these things themselves, I think it's also very important to feel empowered and not just sit and ask what is going to happen to us in the future, as if we are some sort of pathetic, passive bystanders, because we are the ones creating this future. So I think the really key question shouldn't be what will happen, but what do we want to happen? And then think really creatively about how we can steer in that direction. Because the more we know what we want, the more likely we are to get that future.
And we have a question here in the fourth row. Yes.
Human beings live in groups. And to be able to do that for a long time, they need to have a certain level of moral, ethical principles. But how do you teach a robot moral and ethical principles?
So it's a great question. How do you teach morality to robots? There are actually two separate parts to this. One is a technical question. How do you even program a machine to understand what morality is, to understand moral rules? How do you make some AI software that's able to answer questions about moral decisions in the same way that you would, for example? And there's actually a very active research going on around the world for this, but it has way too little funding, so I think this is a great opportunity for example, the Swedish government to support more of this kind of research. And the second question is, what should those moral rules be that we teach our machines? It's not like we have any great consensus around the planet, is there, about what the rules should be. But I think, in parallel to having a healthy discussion about this, it's important to not be paralyzed and let perfect be the enemy of good, because we can at least get started. Think about, for example, when German wings pilot Andreas Lubitz, not too long ago, flew his jet plane into the Alps, killing over 100 people. Nobody who builds an aircraft today ever wants to have that airplane fly into a mountain, right? But Andreas Lubitz just told the computer, the autopilot, to go down to 100 meters altitude. And even though the computer knew there was a mountain there, because it had GPS data and everything, it just said, okay, you know. So let's start by taking this kind of kindergarten ethics that everybody agrees on, like don't fly into mountains, and put it into our machines. And then that will give us great practice and be the baby steps that we can keep building on as we put in more and more sophisticated moral understanding into our machines in the future.
Thank you. I think we might have time for two more. It's one right over there. Go ahead.
In line with the last questions, what difficulties do you see in achieving a friendly AI in contrast to the other possibilities?
I see there being really four questions. The first one, and the third one is, how can we make machines retain their values if they keep getting smarter? A lot of kids change their values as they grow up, and we want to make sure that machines don't just like us for a little bit, but keep being nice to us even if they become more powerful than us. And then the fourth question is the one about what the values should be. All of these questions need to have a lot of people thinking hard about them, which means we need to support research on all of them. And these questions are so hard, I can easily see it taking decades to get the answers, which means we need to start that research today, and not the night before somebody switches on a superintelligence.
Thank you. I think we have a question here in the second row, and I think I want to throw in the last one. There was somebody waving up right here. Yes. No, we, yes. There we are. Yeah, in the blue shirt. So let's do you after. There you go.
The American climate scientist Gavin Schmidt just wrote an article debating, would it be possible if there had been intelligent societies on Earth like 100 million years ago? He also wrote like a science fiction story. And the take-home message was, have high-tech societies a very limited time span? And I would like, I mean, it comes back to your question of AI. What if high-tech societies were not lost?
Well, that is true. But I'm more optimistic than that. I don't think there's any law of nature that says that high-tech societies have to self-destruct almost immediately. I think certainly we have the potential to screwing up like this if we're careless and stick our heads in the sand like ostriches. But we also have the potential to do incredibly wonderful things. Now, think about it. After 13.8 billion years, right, on this little spinning ball in space, we have this incredible opportunity we've waited so long for. We are these conscious beings with big hearts and great dreams. And we can do so much. All the little squabbles you can read about in the news of just little petty quibbles in some sort of zero-sum game. Oh, I'm going to have this square meter of Earth. But no, you're going to, not you, blah, blah. With better technology, we can solve all of today's problems and have enough resources for everybody to be better off. And not just on Earth, but even throughout much of our cosmos for billions and billions of years. So I think it's very important, in summary, to not just get depressed about this and just read, get dragged along in some sort of gloomy mood just because newspapers sometimes like to put scary headlines about the Terminator on the front page. And remember how wonderful this opportunity is. Artificial intelligence offers us an opportunity to amplify our own intelligence and solve our hardest problems and do absolutely wonderful things. And I'm optimistic that if we really take both the threats and this opportunity seriously, and not lazy, but really work hard on this, we can create an amazing future. And I hope you'll all help me with this. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. I think we have one last question, if my staff is willing. The 7th, the 9th, and the 11th row are waving at the same time, and the lamp is in my eye, so I don't know who got the microphone. Does somebody there have a microphone? Yes, sir, yes, go right.
Hi, I'd like to refer to the human history so far, that every time some new tool comes along, usually the richer people, the more powerful people, are the first ones to use it, because they have the money to buy it. Is the science community by any chance thinking of how to prevent this time? Because as you say, it's a very, very, very dangerous tool if it gets in the wrong hands. They'd of course like to use it to obtain more power, more money.
Absolutely. When we had this Asilomar conference, this was really a key focus, because the AI researchers I know and scientists I know are by and large very idealistic people who really want technology to be used for good. But they're also mindful of the fact that that does not happen automatically. And it will only happen if we really, really plan ahead and make sure that it happens. I want to end on an optimistic note, though, because sometimes people tell me, it's hopeless, you know, whenever science can be used to do terrible things or win wars, for example, it will be used like that. But that's not always the case. Think about biology, for example. When you think about biology, what do you mainly think about? Do you associate it with new ways of curing, new ways of killing people with biological weapons? Just a few days ago, I actually met Matthew Messelson at a conference. He's 87 years old now. And in the early 70s, he realized that we were at a tipping point, where we were on the verge of a completely crazy arms race in biological weapons between the US and Russia. And he managed to persuade the key politicians involved, which ultimately led to a ban on biological weapons. So this was an example where humanity actually did the right thing. We took this powerful force of biology and steered it into a good direction, where it is still today. And I bet you, of the biology students who are in the audience here, not a single one of you has any interest in working to make biological weapons, even if they offer you a well-paying job for it. And I think we want to get to that place where it's the same way for artificial intelligence. The people who work on this technology have a moral component doing what they do and are clear on why they're doing it to make humanity better. And not just going to sell out to the nearest rich guy who wants to pay them more money to do something bad with them. And instead make sure that we use AI for good. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you get time, please share your views. Thank you.